The world 10,000 years ago was an extremely fascinating place. Already by this time, our species had spread out to nearly every corner of the world. The days of the last glacial period were over and our species was thriving in its wake. Complex technologies were being developed, symbolism was a part of daily life, and the beginning of agriculture was well underway. It is such an amazing time because we can really see that humanity and ultimately civilization were getting their foothold. Today we will be talking about all of the amazing things that were happening around 10,000 years ago. Since our discoveries don't all conveniently line up exactly at this date, I will be extending this time frame 1,000 years on both ends. This will allow us to get a much better idea of what on earth we were doing during this time. There are tons of discoveries and unique sites from this period, and not all of them could be mentioned. If you know of something not mentioned during this period, please leave a comment down below so we can all learn from them. Now, without further ado, let's get into the video. To understand the world 10,000 years ago, we must first gain an understanding of what was happening with the climate. The last glacial period, often referred to as the Ice Age, was an exceptionally cold time starting around 100,000 years ago. During this time, modern humans, aka Homo sapiens, had already spread out of Africa roughly 70,000 years ago. And by about 20,000 years ago, we were just about everywhere. As modern humans spread, they interbred with local hominin populations including Neanderthals, Denisovans, and likely yet unknown hominins. Much of the DNA from these hybridization events was quickly bred out of these populations. But the DNA that was useful was kept and some of it even remains in modern populations. By around 20,000 years ago, the last glacial period had reached its coldest extent, with ice sheets extending over much of the northern hemisphere. Though glacial periods do not last forever, and due to the Milankovitch cycle, changes in the Earth's orbit and orientation to the sun meant that an interglacial was coming. Ice sheets declined as temperatures rose, and by 11,700 years ago, the glacial period was over. The Pleistocene period had come to an end, and the Holocene period was beginning. Along with the changing climate, many of the megafauna species which thrived during the Pleistocene no longer reigned. The cause for their extinction has long been argued, though most can agree that two factors were primarily responsible: the change in climate and human activities. Which factor was more prominent certainly varied region to region, though it is a topic for another day. Along with the changing climate, the melting glaciers caused the sea level to rise by around 7.5 meters or 24 feet in only 160 years. This submerged massive amounts of land, though the sea level 10,000 years ago was still much lower than it is today. This allowed humans to keep living on many now submerged lands around the world. One of these areas is the first area we will be talking about, Doggerland. Doggerland was a massive area between the British Isles and Northern Europe which was connected 10,000 years ago. Here the Maglemosian culture thrived. These people were the direct descendants of Magdalenian populations who once hunted now extinct megafauna including mammoth and cave bear. However, with the changing climate, the specialized hunting of large animals or large groups of animals became less viable, and these populations had to focus on a broader hunter-gatherer way of life. This is what researchers refer to as the Mesolithic. As the glaciers melted and steppe and tundra became lush forests and wetlands, people focused on exploiting a wide array of plant and animal resources. They created complicated tools out of stone microliths as well as bone and antler. With them, they hunted deer, caught rabbits, and speared fish. They also made axes, picks, and digging sticks out of antler and flint. The first definite weapons of war came into existence during this time in the form of drilled round stones that were almost certainly used as mace heads. Some may have lived in settled villages, though most appear to have been quite nomadic. Various animals were hunted by these people, including bison, aurochs, deer, and especially reindeer. Reindeer populations still ranged far and wide throughout Northern Europe during this time. A recent discovery may shed light on how these people hunted such mobile animals. A rock wall nearly a kilometer long was discovered off of the northern coast of Germany in the Baltic Sea. Constructed 10,000 years ago, it was likely used to guide reindeer or other animals to ambush points or traps. Various cultures from more recent times in Siberia and the Arctic have constructed relatively similar structures. The Inuit would often guide caribou into water where they could easily be picked off by people in kayaks. It is possible that these people were using this wall to coordinate similar hunts. To the north, in the newly emerging lands of Scandinavia, a new culture emerged 10,000 years ago. It was assumed for many years that the regions of the Arctic Circle in northern Europe would have been uninhabitable during this time. New discoveries have shown that the people of the Khamsa culture were quickly able to migrate into this region, most likely with the use of watercraft. They even made it to the province of Finnmark over 10,000 years ago. They seem to have relied on many coastal resources such as shellfish and marine mammals. Some even appear to have ventured deep within the mountainous interior of Norway. Carved rock art has been found during this period depicting a variety of naturalistic images. Moving down to the Iberian Peninsula, we find the quite unique Azilian culture. This culture and Iberia in general are interesting because they retained a high level of ancestry from the Goyet-Q2 cluster, which were some of the first modern humans to inhabit Europe after the Neanderthals. These people also carved extremely well-made harpoons and were obsessed with painting and engraving rocks. These people mainly consumed deer, goat, and seafood near the coast. Honey also seems to have been favored during this time, telling by a few very interesting depictions in rock art. Another cave depicts what appears to have been a battle between a group of archers. Three archers are drawn and circled by a group of four. This is quite interesting as evidence of violence from this time period is quite rare, especially in cave art. Moving around the Mediterranean, both the Italian peninsula and the Balkans were home to late Epigravettian cultures. These people were carrying on aspects of the Gravettian culture which first appeared around 30,000 years ago. They utilized microliths and backed blades to create deadly composite tools. With them, they hunted reindeer, aurochs, and wild boar. They also heavily exploited marine resources, including hard-to-catch species such as grouper. This may suggest that they were using some kind of watercraft. At Magura Cave in modern Bulgaria, many strange and very stylized paintings can be found which date to between 8 and 10,000 years old. Out of all the figures, animals, people, and supposed deities can be seen. The human figures are quite interesting, with many wielding bows, and one figure even seems to have an arrow through its midsection. Some of the scenes have been interpreted as hunts, while others appear to have been religious ceremonies. All of the cultures I have mentioned so far belong to the genetic group known as the Western Hunter-Gatherers. These people were undoubtedly European, though they looked quite different from the modern inhabitants of Western Europe. Their skin ranged from olive to black, and their hair was typically dark, while their eyes were typically blue. Modern Europeans look so different from these people because their genetics are mostly from later migrations of Anatolian farmers and Indo-European steppe herders which came to Europe long after 10,000 years ago. 10,000 years ago, the ancestors of the steppe herders were also hunter-gatherers, named the Eastern Hunter-Gatherers. They had fairly light skin with dark hair and mostly brown eyes. Their range extended from northern Asia to eastern Europe, though most of eastern Europe was actually a mix between western and eastern hunter-gatherers. The Swiderian culture was made up of a mix of these populations and was centered in the lands of modern Poland and the southern Baltic region. They were semi-settled hunter-gatherers living in small settlements besides lakes, rivers, and marshes. They made quite impressive stone tools, including large tanked blades and bone points which had stone blades inserted into them. These stone blades were removed from cores with a pressure technique which appears to have originated far to the northeast all the way in modern Mongolia around 20,000 years ago. With their deadly points, they extensively hunted deer and moose, likely with the help of hunting dogs. I just found out by researching this video that the animal we call moose, the Europeans call elk. Apparently, the European settlers who first came to North America confused American elk or wapiti with European elk, likely because most of them had never actually seen a moose. So the settlers called the wapiti elk and took the Native American name for moose to describe European elk. Of course, other European languages have different words for this animal, but most are cognates from the original Indo-European word for the animal. Speaking of animals, let's take a break from the video to talk about today's sponsor, Beastlord, the New Land. Beastlord is an animal-themed strategy game for your mobile device. As a lord, you must harness the power of various beasts in order to expand your territory, collect resources, and acquire new beasts. Along the way, you will learn interesting real-world facts about your animals. There are over 500 animals in the game which you can acquire. The game features a wonderful realistic painting style for all the animals and art. By using your animals, you can expand and cultivate new areas. You can receive the Lion, the ultimate combat hero, on your second day of logging in. Lion is your go-to melee hero with serious combat skills and some cool command tricks. Perfect for beginners because it pumps up your whole beast squad. Plus, early on, it helps crank up your squad's expedition capacity big time. In Beast Lord, Lions are like squad captains. When you put one in your team, it amps up everyone's expedition skills. As it levels up, it beefs up the team's attack and defense, making your beast squad super effective. And hey, when the Lion's leading the pack, its own attack power shoots through the roof too. This game is seriously really fun to play, and I found it satisfying to clear out the world and make it my own territory. Use the link in the description to download the game and use code BL777 to get a head start in the game. Huge thanks to Beast Lord, the new land, for sponsoring the channel, and I hope you all go out and give it a try. It's free after all. Now, let's get back to the video. Further to the east, on either side of the Volga River, lived cultures such as the Butovo and Shigir people. These people were mostly Eastern hunter-gatherers genetically and appear to have been the ancestors of the Indo-Europeans. They used relatively similar technology to the Swiderians but had their own unique cultural variations. They thrived in the post-glacial landscape which included abundant lakes and developing woodlands. The Shigir people inhabited the Eastern Ural Mountains and are primarily known from an interesting wooden figure found at one of their sites. The Shigir idol was discovered in many fragments in the Middle Urals. It is thought that it may have stood more than 5 meters or 16 feet tall. It depicts a three-dimensional man's face on its tip, while its body has 7 additional faces and geometric carvings. The figure was made from a quite large tree which was cut down, split, and then shaped, presumably using polished adzes and tools made from the jaws of beaver also found in the region. The sculpture is typically interpreted as a symbolic object, a part of the spiritual world of these people. Such interpretations seem likely when compared to the highly symbolic totem poles of the Haida people of Canada. The Europe of 10,000 years ago was an amazing place full of blossoming cultures and new technologies. Though these people were still hunter-gatherers, they were finding new ways to exploit their environments and some were even able to settle down. One can imagine how fascinating it would have been to witness a tribe of these great wild people celebrate a cultural event or perform a shamanistic ritual. There is far more to be said about Europe from this time and there were cultures I left out, but we should move on to discuss the tremendous advancements that were occurring in Western Asia. Long before 10,000 years ago, Western Asia was developing not only agriculture but also complex architecture. As far back as 23,000 years ago, the small-scale cultivation of edible grasses was being conducted on the shores of the Sea of Galilee in northern Israel. The seeds from these wild grasses could be ingested outright, but by grinding them up in basalt mortars, they were able to create flour which was much easier to digest. These people also ate many wild fruits, nuts, and hunted gazelle, deer, aurochs, wild boar, and waterfowl. The Natufian culture appeared around 15,000 years ago and took advantage of the abundance of food. Though these people were still hunter-gatherers, they were able to become fully or partially sedentary. This is significant because the vast majority of hunter-gatherers must constantly be on the move in order to find more resources. The new free time and ability to stay put led these populations to build permanent shelters. They constructed complex settlements out of a variety of materials, including limestone slabs, shaped rocks, and mud bricks. With their architectural prowess, they even made areas specifically for storing large amounts of food and large structures that have been interpreted as symbolic. They also created cemeteries and an abundance of artwork, including carved stone and bone objects. One of these objects, named the Ain Sakri Lovers, is approximately 11,000 years old and is the oldest known representation of two people engaged in sexual intercourse. These Natufian populations were clearly on their way to developing agriculture over a long period of time, and a sudden change in the climate may have actually forced them into it. One theory suggests that the Younger Dryas, which was a cold and arid period, vastly reduced the amount of wild cereals available in the region, perhaps forcing Natufian people to go out of their way to plant and care for seeds. This is an interesting idea, though regardless, agriculture and the domestication of animals would first appear between 11 and 12,000 years ago. By around 11,500 years ago, emmer wheat, einkorn wheat, hulled barley, peas, lentils, bitter vetch, chickpeas, and flax were cultivated in the wider Levant region. They appear virtually simultaneously, though some crops were favored over others. Wheat in particular was favored because it could be turned into bread, beer, and gruel. It could also be combined with other crops like peas and lentils to make soups. Around the same time, many animal species were also domesticated. These people already had domesticated dogs, which were domesticated well over 20,000 years ago. Perhaps understanding that animals could be tamed, they realized instead of systematically hunting their prey, they could keep them and breed them. Pigs, goats, and sheep were domesticated around 11,000 years ago in Mesopotamia, and cattle were domesticated around 10,500 years ago in Turkey. Unlike their Natufian forebears, they now did not need to hunt, though they likely still did to supplement their diet. Through their genius, they had tamed everything they needed to live a permanently settled life. By 11,000 years ago, permanent settlement at Jericho began, a quite famous city that is still inhabited today. Numerous circular dwellings were made of clay and straw and featured hearths within homes. Complex artwork was made depicting human faces, and some actual human skulls were covered with plaster and given shells for eyes. This appears to have been a form of ancestor worship. Around the entire settlement was made a massive stone wall 3.6 meters or 12 feet high and around 1.8 meters or 6 feet wide at its base. A stone tower built on the wall was 8.5 meters or 28 feet tall with 22 stone steps leading up to the top. The wall and tower may have been used for defense against enemies and or floodwaters. These structures may have taken 100 men more than 100 days to construct. The population at Jericho during this time is debated, with some saying as low as a few hundred and others saying as much as a few thousand people. Jericho is not the oldest settlement from this period, though the artwork made, the architectural complexity, and the pure size of the site is extremely impressive. Another amazing site from Western Asia would be Göbekli Tepe. Göbekli Tepe is an amazing settlement that was inhabited from 11,500 to 10,000 years ago. The site was initially interpreted as a sanctuary or temple that was used by groups of nomadic hunters. Though further discoveries including water supply installations, domestic structures, and stone tools provide evidence that the site was permanently lived in. Though these people do not appear to have practiced agriculture and still lived in a Natufian hunter-gatherer way of life. This is interesting considering how massive the site of Göbekli Tepe is, including large limestone blocks with complex carvings. The size and complexity of Göbekli Tepe helped change our ideas about what hunter-gatherers could be capable of with the right food sources and procurement strategies. It is also important to mention that Göbekli Tepe is not the only site of its kind in this region. 11 other sites, some older and some younger, have been found, and combined with Göbekli Tepe, are known as Tas Tepeler. Moving east to Mesopotamia, we find evidence of agricultural settlements dating to around 10,000 years ago. Agriculture was centered around the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, as you may have heard of in school. Small villages like that of Jarmo contained as many as 150 people. Domesticated crops likely spread to the region from the Levant, though pigs, goats, and sheep appear to have been domesticated in the area. This area would eventually give rise to the first civilizations a few thousand years later. Another fascinating thing about Western Asia is that it was the first place that metal was ever smelted. Our earliest evidence for copper use comes from a copper pendant from northern Iraq that has been dated to about 10,700 years ago. Other copper artifacts such as beads have been found. It is unclear if this copper was actually smelted or just pounded from natural pure copper deposits. Some copper sources are so pure that you can simply grab a piece and pound it into any shape you'd like. Some sites from the time do contain evidence of malachite, which is a copper ore. This malachite appears to have been traded from distant lands. Though copper ore and copper artifacts are found at some of these sites, evidence of actual smelting does not appear until later. It is possible that these people were experimenting with metallurgy technology, but by 10,000 years ago, its development was absent or in its infancy. Next, we set our sights to the continent of Africa. 10,000 years ago, Africa was well within the African humid period. This was a time when Africa, and particularly the Sahara, was far wetter. From 14,500 to 5,000 years ago, the Sahara contained lakes and rivers with wide grasslands that supported a vast variety of animals. The humid period is actually part of a cycle, which has caused around 230 humid periods in the past 7 to 8 million years. The Sahara is expected to become green again in around the year 17,000. Such a large and lush environment supported large numbers of hunter-gatherers and fishermen. The Nile Delta, which has always been quite lush, was even more productive during the time. Various Mesolithic hunter-gatherers hunted, gathered, and fished in the area. An abundance of wild grasses and grains allowed these people to have a similar surplus of food as the Natufian hunter-gatherers to the east. Sickles and grinding stones were invented to harvest and process these grains more effectively. These people were sedentary before the domestication of crops, and some evidence suggests that they were even hostile with neighboring groups. Eventually, domesticated crops and animals would be imported into the region from Western Asia. This would vastly increase the population in the area and eventually lead to Egyptian civilization thousands of years later. Throughout the Sahara, many familiar African animals such as elephants, giraffes, antelopes, baboons, wildebeest, and zebra were widespread throughout the region. Large herds of some of these animals expanded across the entire desert, though some were still limited to regions with more water. The appearance of aquatic animals such as crocodiles, hippos, turtles, and fish are a testament to how lush much of the Sahara was. Other carnivores such as hyenas, cheetahs, and of course human hunters also followed the herds into the region. An important culture in North Africa during this time was the Capsian culture. This culture flourished in the Green Sahara, hunting big animals like aurochs and antelope, but also smaller animals such as hares and even snails. These human hunters carried an array of sophisticated stone tools such as well-made projectile points, stone axes, and adzes. It is hard to imagine that these people were felling trees in the Sahara all those years ago. They also created bone fishing hooks and barbed points to spear fish in the abundant lakes and rivers. Some sites contain piles of thousands of fish bones. They utilized ostrich eggs as water bottles and buried their dead in shallow graves. Cave and rock art were also a very important aspect of their culture. The Capsian culture was not the only Mesolithic culture of North Africa, though they are one of the most well known. They may have been partially responsible for the wonderful cave paintings in the Sahara. The populations migrating from West Africa also contributed to these sites. A cave named the Cave of Swimmers, located in central Libya, was one of the clues to researchers that the Sahara may have actually been lush in the past. The cave has paintings of people which appear to be swimming along with other animals such as giraffes and hippopotamus. Dating has revealed that the paintings are around 10,000 years old. Another site in Algeria named Tassili-Nir Hajir contains as many as 15,000 engravings and paintings. Antelopes, crocodiles, and humans are all depicted. Some of these paintings are younger as denoted by herds of cattle, though they may date to around 10,000 years ago. Human figures are typically absent in cave art, though many can be found at this site. Some are shown hunting and dancing, and some are found doing other things. Some of the most interesting human depictions here have been referred to as shamans. One painting named the Tassili Mushroom Figure depicts an anthropomorphic figure with what appears to be mushrooms growing from his body. The presence of a mask and strange clothing certainly have shamanistic connotations. One study which tested 33 contemporary hunter-gatherer societies across four continents found that 70% of people believed in shamanism. Shamanism often includes altered states of consciousness from dancing, fasting, or various substances including mushrooms. It is plausible that this figure represents a shaman, though we cannot be entirely sure. Another figure that is a little younger depicts a running horned woman. Another site in Libya in the Acacus Mountains preserve wonderful paintings including depictions of large animals and large hunting scenes. The population creating this art actually appears to have come all the way across the Sahara from West Africa. West Africa similarly benefited from the African humid period. The rainforest and wooded savanna were much larger and extended over much of West Africa. Around 11,400 years ago, people in Mali created the earliest pottery in Africa. They also appear to have independently invented bow technology. They then carried these advancements into the Central Sahara. Though populations remaining in West Africa began domesticating oil palm and raffia palm as early as 11,000 years ago, the seeds of oil palms are rich in oil, which is high in calories and can be used for cooking, while raffia palm fruit can be eaten. Both of these palms are also used for their fibers, wood, and their sap can be fermented into wine. These people appear to have had a complex culture, which include large burial sites such as the graveyard at the site of Gobero in Niger. Over 180 burials have been found here, though only 67 have been excavated and many date to a later period. Still, at least 20 burials have been found dating to around 10,000 years ago, and they often have grave goods including pottery and stone tools. Moving to East Africa, we find evidence of the collection of a variety of wild plants including grains and grasses. By around 10,000 years ago, domesticated wheat and barley spread from the Levant, and sheep and cattle possibly spread from the Arabian Peninsula. Due to the humid period, the Ethiopian highlands were much wetter, supporting large forests. By around 9,000 years ago, the settlers of the highlands domesticated donkeys, likely used for food, though they also may have been used for carrying loads. One of the most significant sites from 10,000 years ago comes from the shore of Lake Turkana in Kenya. As some of you may know, some of the oldest hominid fossils have been found near this lake, and it is considered a cradle of human life. Though an event which occurred here 10,000 years ago reminds us of the darker aspects of the human condition. At the site of Nataruk, 27 individuals were slain in a direct attack on their people. Of these lost souls, 20 were adults, one was a teenager, and the six other were children. They were attacked with bows and arrows, clubs, and a close-range bladed weapon, probably a knife. Skulls were fractured, bones were broken, deep cuts were made, and projectile points were lodged deeply into bones. The points were made of obsidian, which is not common in the area, suggesting that the attackers came from afar. Two victims appear to have been bound with rope and perhaps drowned or strangled, as they show no skeletal injuries. One of them was a young woman who was heavily pregnant. Various interpretations of the site have been made, with many suggesting that this group was massacred by a foreign band of hunter-gatherers. Either way, this is some of the earliest evidence of intergroup or interpersonal violence among hunter-gatherers. Warfare is typically thought to have originated after populations had settled down, as the vast majority of our evidence comes from the Neolithic period onward. This site shows us that hunter-gatherers were very capable of committing atrocities. Though since it is a very unique site, it is unclear what we can infer about hunter-gatherers in general. Either way, this site stands as a reminder of what we are capable of, regardless of society or circumstance. Moving to Central and South Africa, we see a much more forested environment 10,000 years ago. Grasslands and savannas still existed in the southernmost regions, though it would have still been more humid than it is today. Throughout Central and Southern Africa lived pygmy and Khoisan populations. They were both hunter-gatherer groups, though they differed quite significantly. Pygmy populations split off from other African populations 50 to 90,000 years ago. Their short stature appears to have developed fairly recently as an adaptation to their forested environment. 10,000 years ago, they still would have been quite short, and their populations were widespread throughout Central Africa. The Khoisan are an even more ancient population, which split off from all other populations over 100,000 years ago. Modern humans originated in East Africa, and the ancestors of the Khoisan were some of the first to move south around 150,000 years ago, where they have remained to this day. 10,000 years ago, Khoisan populations dominated most of southern Africa. One of their sites, known as Bushman's Kloof, is a collection of more than 130 rock art sites dating to as much as 10,000 years ago. The sites contain a variety of human and animal figures. Elephants seem to have been a common theme, as well as bow hunters. Some human figures appear to be in trance-like states, possibly suggesting that shamanism was a part of their culture. Many other sites around South Africa feature rock art, and some of it is very unique. But now, let's set our sights to the rich lands of the Indian subcontinent. These lands were home to many populations of hunter-gatherers, though by 10,000 years ago, agriculture and animal husbandry was making its way into the region. Aurochs appear to have been independently domesticated as early as 10,500 years ago in eastern India. To the west of the Indus River lies the site of Mehrigarh in modern-day Pakistan. It contains some of the earliest evidence of pottery, domesticated wheat varieties, and herd animals nearly 10,000 years ago. This area would eventually become home to the Indus River Valley civilization thousands of years later, though the vast majority of India during this time was home to hunter-gatherers. Along the western coast of the subcontinent, the site of Langnaj preserves evidence of a wide array of animals hunted by Mesolithic people. They include wolves, rhinoceros, wild boar, deer, and nilgai. These people were hunting with microlithic tools characteristic of the Mesolithic. Further south, the Konkan petroglyphs dating to over 10,000 years ago preserve a unique artistic tradition. Well over 1,000 of these carvings have been discovered. A huge variety of animals, including sharks, stingrays, tigers, rhinos, and birds, were carved. Strange anthropomorphic carvings are particularly unusual. Some show interactions with animals and symbols, and others just appear to have been silhouettes. At the Bhimbetka caves of central India, many amazing paintings can be found. They range from Upper Paleolithic to Medieval, but a variety of Mesolithic paintings are from around 10,000 years ago. They are hunting scenes depicting the use of spears and bows and arrows. There are also strange scenes of animal totems which have been interpreted as depicting tribal warfare. Other images include communal dances, musical instruments, pregnant women, and burials. It is clear that the people of this region lived quite culturally rich Mesolithic lives. Moving to Southeast Asia, around 10,000 years ago, chickens were first being domesticated. Chickens were domesticated from red jungle fowl in modern-day Thailand. These birds are well adapted to take advantage of the vast amount of food that becomes available during the bamboo seeding cycle, which allows them to reproduce exponentially. Humans took advantage of this natural adaptation, and this is in part why there are 23 billion chickens alive today. Chickens are an amazing food source due to their ability to provide meat and eggs without being competitive to our food sources. Though chicken domestication originated in modern Thailand, it would take some time for them to be brought around Asia and beyond. 10,000 years ago, the Polynesian people had not yet spread from their homeland of Taiwan. During this time, Southeast Asia and Australia was home to three main groups of people. Much of insular Southeast Asia was home to the Negritos, while New Guinea was home to the New Guineans, and Australia was home to the Aboriginals. These three populations descend from the first modern humans to enter the area. Many people often confuse these populations with being African due to their dark complexion and sometimes seemingly African facial features. However, they descend from the same metapopulation as East Asian and Oceanian people, and therefore are most closely related to other East Asians. The term Negrito, meaning little black person in Spanish, is still used to refer to the short-statured and dark-skinned populations inhabiting insular Southeast Asia. These populations descend from the Hoabinhian hunter-gatherers that were widespread throughout the region. 10,000 years ago, these populations were already likely proficient at catching fish. A fish hook from East Timor dating to 42,000 years ago has been found alongside thousands of fish bones. These people likely also hunted the diverse array of fauna on these islands, though archaeological evidence is hard to come by. This is partially due to the rising sea levels since the Pleistocene. 10,000 years ago, much of the Sunda Shelf was still above the waves. This vast landmass may have been home to large populations. Across the Wallace Line, which is a deep channel between Southeast Asia and New Guinea which prevents terrestrial animals from crossing, we find the former continent of Sahul. 10,000 years ago, New Guinea was directly connected to Australia with a large landmass. These lush lowlands supported a large array of marsupials, with the only placental mammals being bats and rodents. But before we turn to Australia, we should look at what was happening in New Guinea at this time. Evidence suggests that plant exploitation and some cultivation began in New Guinea around 10,000 years ago. Sugarcane, a few root vegetables, and possibly bananas were then domesticated around 9,000 years ago. Agricultural drainage systems have been found in Cuck Swamp dating to about 9,000 years ago as well. Cuck Swamp is recognized as a place where agriculture independently developed, making it one of only around six other regions where this can be confirmed. Another interesting thing to note about New Guinea is its geography. Due to the dense vegetation and mountainous terrain, it is very isolated. The expansive highlands dominate the island, and the highest mountain peak is 4,900 meters or 16,000 feet tall. That's higher than any mountain in the continental United States. Moving to Australia, we run into a similar problem of limited evidence. Much of Australia was relatively dry 10,000 years ago, and naturally most people lived toward the coast, a coast which is now mostly submerged. Much of this submerged region was in the north, which connected mainland Australia to New Guinea. One study found that this landmass supported populations between 50,000 and 500,000 people. Though by 10,000 years ago, around 50% of this landmass was submerged, and we actually have evidence that these populations may have fallen into violence. New rock art styles suddenly appearing in Arnhem Land of northern Australia depict scenes of battles. These displaced populations may have had no other choice but to fight for the dwindling resources of the region. The coastline around the rest of Australia was also much larger long ago. The island of Tasmania was even connected to the mainland. Australian tribes even seem to have stories about when the sea level was much lower. Linguists have identified 18 stories from different tribes of Aboriginals that seem to date back over 10,000 years ago. The Ngarrindjeri people tell a story about an ancestral character named Ngarrindjeri. In this story, he chased his wives until they ran to Kangaroo Island, which was surrounded by shallow water. In retribution, Ngarrindjeri rose the seas between them and the mainland. If this story is to be taken as a true account of geological changes, that means the sea was already 100 feet lower at this time, which would match up to about 10,000 years ago. Some tribes tell stories about grasslands which kangaroos once roamed, and some talk about now submerged islands and rising sea levels. Though ancient stories should be interpreted skeptically, the many stories from different tribes which accurately describe geography they would not have known of suggest that some of these stories really are over 10,000 years old. Throughout the continent of Australia, the Aboriginals were exploiting a wide array of environments. 10,000 years ago, these people were likely using boomerangs and woomeras for hunting. The woomera is a spear thrower which is similar to the likely independently developed atlatl. Spear throwers almost certainly have multiple points of origin. Their darts can be tipped with stone points to create deadly weapons good for hunting kangaroos and even crocodiles. Aboriginal people developed a diverse array of stone technology, including my personal favorites, Liliera points. They were large unifacial blades taken off of a core. The base could be covered in resin and used as a knife, or they could be mounted onto a spear or dart. The Aboriginals of 10,000 years ago lived all over the continent in a diverse array of environments. They hunted almost anything that moved, including fish, turtles, crocodiles, goanna, kangaroos, and more. They also extensively collected insects, plants, and aquatic resources like mussels and water lilies. The Aboriginals also created countless cave and rock paintings. Some of this art is over 20,000 years old and depicts scenes from the Dreamtime. The Dreamtime forms the foundation of Aboriginal religion and culture, with its origins likely extending over 65,000 years. It refers to a time when ancestral characters inhabited the land with supernatural abilities. These characters were not gods, but more like heroes. The Dreamtime covers past events, the creation of the universe, the genesis of humanity, and how the Creator envisioned humans to live in their world. Such a deep and rich mythology has inspired the creation of some truly amazing paintings. Rock art in Kakadu National Park preserves a diverse array of images depicting Aboriginal life 10,000 years ago. I should note that many of these images are much younger and even depict European sailing ships. The paintings at Ubir are generally thought to be much older. Some images display the thylacine or the Tasmanian tiger that went extinct only 2,000 years ago on the mainland. Other paintings show men with barbed harpoons and a variety of other figures perhaps associated with the Dreamtime. There surely is much more to be said about this continent 10,000 years ago, though it's time to move on. Moving to East Asia 10,000 years ago, rice cultivation was already well underway. Asian rice appears to have a single genetic origin point in the Pearl River Valley of modern China. The rice may have been domesticated independently in other areas such as Korea. Wild rice varieties were harvested all over East Asia, though scholars do suggest that actual domesticated rice originated in southern China. In northern China, millet may have been domesticated as early as 10,000 years ago by Sino-Tibetan speakers. Much of East Asia was already using pottery during this time, as it was invented in China over 20,000 years ago. The populations living in East Asia during this time were mainly hunter-gatherers, though depending on the region, some communities focused more on farming activities. Moving north, 10,000 years ago, rice was already being cultivated in Korea and a rich pottery tradition emerged. These people lived in semi-permanent pit houses and exploited many marine resources. The discovery of limestone sinkers suggests that boats and nets were used to deep-sea fish. Across the Sea of Japan, the Jomon culture lived. 10,000 years ago, their populations had already spread over the entire Japanese archipelago. Japan was a very wild place at this time and contained many species, including deer, wild boar, Asiatic black bear, brown bear, and tigers. The Jomon people exploited the abundant food sources on the mainland, but also the coast. Middens containing hundreds or even thousands of shellfish have been found dating to this period. Fish, including salmon and freshwater species, were caught as well. Due to the abundant food sources on the mainland and surrounding coasts, these people were able to become sedentary without agriculture. They created pottery, well-made stone tools, and exploited marine resources. Moving to Siberia, we find an array of cultures flourishing in the post-glacial conditions. During this time, we find evidence of population movement and admixture, particularly in southern and eastern Siberia. The Neo-Siberians largely replaced the ancient North Eurasians. With them, pottery technology spread across Siberia from Lake Baikal all the way to cultures on the Volga River by 9,000 years ago. Cultures across Siberia used an array of stone and bone tools to live a hunter-gatherer lifestyle. Their stone tools often consisted of very fine microblades taken off cores with pressure. Like the other Mesolithic cultures of the time, these blades were inserted into hafts such as projectile points and knife handles. Siberian hunters focused on hunting reindeer, moose, and other large animals of the region. Animals which 10,000 years ago may have included late surviving populations of mammoths. It is typically stated that mammoths and all the other charismatic Pleistocene megafauna went extinct around 12,000 years ago, but in reality, all of these animals had different extinction dates in different regions. One thing about determining when an animal went extinct in the modern day is how do we know we found the last individual? Statistically, it would be a miracle if you were to actually find the remains of the very last animals of a now extinct species. When researching when mammoths and other Pleistocene animals actually went extinct, you will find dates both before and after the 12,000 year mark. We know that mammoths in particular survived far past the last glacial period. Most populations in Siberia disappeared by around 10,000 years ago, though the youngest fossils from the mainland date to 9,650 years ago from the Kitik Peninsula of Siberia. Two studies on environmental DNA, DNA which is collected from environmental samples, suggest that mammoths may have survived in the Tamar Peninsula of Siberia until 4,000 years ago, and the Yukon of North America until about 5,700 years ago. We know for a fact that mammoths survived on St. Paul Island until 5,600 years ago and Wrangel Island until 4,000 years ago. That is contemporary with the construction of the Great Pyramid in Egypt. Most Siberians 10,000 years ago would have never seen a mammoth, though they still may have been hunted in removed regions. During this time, the land bridge which had once formed the massive landmass of Beringia had now become submerged. Though the populations in this area were likely capable of crossing this narrow gap between these continents in small boats or just walking over during winter when ice covered the water. On the American side of the former Beringia lived various cultures adapting to the post-glacial conditions. The far north of the North American continent still had a lot of ice on it, though most of the area was open to human habitation. Though our remains are quite scarce from this period, we still know a good amount about the people of this region. A fundamental distinction that already formed by this period was between the interior and coastal populations. People living in the interior were mobile hunter-gatherers that pursued a variety of large animals, including steppe bison, elk, Dall sheep, caribou, and moose. One study on eDNA found evidence of mammoth and horse dating to between 10,500 and 7,600 years ago. These populations appear to have been very small, likely only a few individuals by 8,000 years ago, though it may have been human hunters that were continuing to lower their numbers. These people made some pretty complex leaf-shaped bifaces and microblades which were mounted in wood or bone composite points. At the Upward Sun River site, researchers discovered the remains of infants which had been buried underneath another individual which had been cremated. These infants were covered in red ochre and buried with grave goods, including 4 antler rods and 2 bifacial points. These tools appear to have been part of a weapon system, perhaps atlatl darts. The Denali people of the early Holocene appear to have been carrying on quite old hunting and gathering traditions, though they were adapted to the faunal changes which occurred at the end of the last ice age. The coastal populations similarly were learning to exploit the abundant marine resources along the Pacific coast. At On Your Knees Cave in southeastern Alaska, a human jaw dating to 10,300 years ago was found to have predominantly consumed marine resources. These populations may have even constructed boats during this time, as some of the species found at their sites could not simply be caught from the shore. We do not have evidence of these boats, but evidence of boats is notoriously hard to find in the archaeological record. The use of fish hooks, nets, and barbed points may support the idea that they did have boats. Most of North America 10,000 years ago was transitioning from the late Paleo-Indian to the early Archaic period. During the Paleo-Indian period, most people lived in bands of migrating hunter-gatherers following herds of Pleistocene megafauna such as giant bison, woolly mammoth, mastodon, giant sloth, camel, and more. By 10,000 years ago, most of these animals were extirpated in most regions, though some isolated populations survived. The bison emerged as the most abundant megafaunal species throughout the continent. Though these bison were Bison antiquus, the larger ancestor of modern bison. They were around 25% bigger, weighing up to 3,500 pounds or 1,600 kilograms. Other large animals such as various deer species including elk and moose expanded their range along with black bear, brown bear, and wolves. All of these animals became a fundamental aspect of Native American life along with other more regional animals. Archaic period Native Americans still primarily hunted and gathered, though they were able to settle down a little more by intensively exploiting their local environments. In the varied lands of the American West lived a variety of early archaic cultures. They mainly made stemmed stone points, which were great for hunting big game. One unfortunate man was even stabbed by one of these points, and he lived to tell the tale. The roughly 9,000-year-old remains of Kennewick Man represent a very significant and even more controversial discovery. This is mainly due to the age of the specimen and the dispute about what should be done with the remains. Kennewick Man was fairly old for his time at around 40 years old. He lived almost exclusively on a diet of marine mammals and drank glacial meltwater. He must have lived near the coast and migrated as far as Alaska throughout his life. Examination of his remains found a stone projectile lodged in the side of his pelvic bone. It was leaf-shaped and made of a volcanic stone. Its morphology fits that of a cascade point. The wound had healed, but likely left him in long-lasting pain. He had a variety of other injuries and ailments that indicate a hard life. He seems to have died of natural causes and was buried by his people. Kennewick Man was so controversial because his physical features did not appear to be Native American, which anthropologists argued gave them the right to study the remains since no connection of kinship could be positively identified. Finally, nearly 20 years after Kennewick Man's discovery, DNA tests concluded that he was most closely related to Native Americans, and he was particularly close to the people of the Colville Reservation from Washington. They were one of the 5 tribes that originally claimed the remains as their kin. He was reburied in 2017 at an undisclosed location. Another amazing discovery from the Pacific Northwest are the 10,000-year-old sandals found at Fort Rock, Oregon. Over a dozen of these sandals, ranging from kid size to adult size, have been found at Fort Rock Cave. They were woven from sagebrush bark, and most of the examples are heavily worn. Other similar specimens have been found at Cougar Mountain and Catlow Cave, all dating between 10,500 and 9,200 years ago. These shoes are by far the oldest preserved in the fossil record, though humans have clearly been wearing shoes for a lot longer. California, like other regions of the West, was mainly divided between coastal and inland populations. Fishing and the hunting of marine mammals was done on the coast, with people even inhabiting the Channel Islands during this period. Other cultures inland focused on the hunting of deer and gathering of plants such as acorns. The La Brea Tar Pits, as we talked about in my last video, check it out, are excellent at preserving fossil remains. Out of the millions of bones excavated there, the remains of one woman have been found. Named the La Brea Woman, her remains are 10,250 years old. She was between 18 and 25 at her time of death. The wear on her teeth suggests that she often ate stone-ground food sources, likely acorns. Her skull was fractured, and little healing suggests that this wound may have killed her. This may explain why her remains were found at the tar pits and no others have been found to date. She did not perish due to an accidental fall into the pits, but seems to have been killed and thrown in, though we cannot say for certain what happened to her. Another cave in Nevada named the Spirit Cave contained the oldest known mummy in North America. The remains of two individuals were found in a cave wrapped with matting made of plant fibers. One of the individuals was preserved much better than the other and was partially mummified. He was wearing moccasins and wrapped in a rabbit skin blanket. The remains date to 9,400 years ago, while DNA testing found that he was similar to North and South American indigenous groups. The remains were given to the Paiute Shoshone tribe, which reburied them in 2018. Finally, moving to the Rockies and Great Plains, we find many cultures centered around bison hunting. Bison population numbers exploded with the Pleistocene extinction events. The bison hunting lifestyle may have been pioneered by the great Folsom hunters with their exceptionally made, fully fluted points. This culture had mostly disbanded by around 11,000 years ago, though their descendants became even more efficient at hunting bison. A variety of well-made point styles were made during this time, such as Agate Basin, Scott's Bluff, and Eden. These points likely tipped at lateral darts, javelins, and spears. These weapons were used to ambush bison, typically in favorable terrain such as narrow stream beds. Even as far back as 10,000 years ago, hunters were driving buffalo off of cliffs. Buffalo jumps are areas which hunters persuade bison to stampede off of cliffs, leading to their deaths. These are highly coordinated hunts requiring many people with specialized tasks. A successful buffalo jump could provide a tribe with an immense amount of food. Some have reportedly killed hundreds or even as many as 1,000 bison in one event. The oldest evidence of a buffalo jump from the bonfire shelter killed around 120 bison around 12,000 years ago. Subsequent layers show that this site was repeatedly used. The bison hunters of the plains were the masters of their world, and there is much more to be said about their lifestyle. But we should move on. The Great Lakes region was once entirely covered in glaciers, but by 10,000 years ago, these lands were full of many productive glacial lakes and woodlands supporting large numbers of game. Hunter-gatherers had also moved into the region and thrived. They may have even been making copper tools as far back as 10,000 years ago. The Great Lakes region has some of the most abundant pure copper deposits in the world. Chunks of this copper, called float copper, were sheared from their veins by glaciers and carried all around the Midwest. These chunks, ranging from small pebbles to massive boulders, could simply be cold hammered into tools and jewelry. Evidence has suggested that the old copper culture may have actually appeared over 9,500 years ago based on copper mines. The oldest securely dated copper artifact from this culture is an 8,500-year-old projectile point from Wisconsin. Copper projectiles or tools are not known from anywhere else in the world during this time. Raw copper was worked in Western Asia, as we mentioned, though it does not appear to have been used for tools. Copper smelting began in the Balkans around 7,500 years ago and spread from there. But that is around 2,500 years later than the evidence from the Great Lakes region. This topic is really quite fascinating considering that many people are under the misconception that metal was not even used in the Americas. I still hear this from people all the time. Make sure to check out my video on the old copper culture to learn more about this fascinating subject. Moving to the east, we see many populations beginning to settle down more than Paleo-Indian times. These people were of course hunter-gatherers and had quite an influence from the Clovis and Folsom cultures. Many of them made quite impressive fluted points, with the most impressive being Cumberland points. These large lance heads have very long flutes on both sides. This is extremely difficult to do. Modern knappers have a hard time reproducing such artifacts and often need special jigs to do so. I have been napping for around 2 or 3 years, and maybe if I really put my mind to it I could make one, though I have my doubts. In the southeastern United States, the Dalton people lived. Their culture thrived hunting and gathering in the rich Mississippi River Valley and beyond. They made distinctive points named Dalton points. Many were fluted, reminiscent of Paleo-Indian times, and they often had exceptional flaking such as the Z-flaked Daltons. These points were heavily resharpened, and after extensive use, they were often turned into drill bits. They also made adzes, a woodworking tool. Traces on their artifacts suggest that they were used on burnt wood, perhaps to make dugout canoes. The most famous Dalton site, known as the Sloan Site, preserves the remains of the oldest known cemetery in the Western Hemisphere. Unfortunately, these individuals were shallowly buried and only bone fragments remain. Still, it is estimated around 30 people were buried along with a total of 439 stone tools. 146 points, 43 adzes, 95 bifaces, and a variety of other stone tools made up the hoard. Some of these bifaces were far over-engineered and may have been items of prestige. Not much cave or rock art is known from North America during this time, though one site on the US-Mexico border is quite impressive. Panther Cave contains a panel of paintings more than 100 feet in length. A giant red panther or mountain lion over 10 feet long was painted on the wall. Many more paintings can be found in the region, some dating to later periods and some which have not been dated. Other important and interesting sites from the modern lands of the United States have been found, though it is time to move on. In Mesoamerica, we find evidence of another hub of agricultural development. Squashes, pumpkins, and bottle gourds were domesticated on several occasions throughout the Americas beginning around 10,000 years ago. Starting around 9,000 years ago, teosinte, the undomesticated ancestor of corn, also known as maize, was transferred into an exceptionally productive crop. Later, after thousands of years of domestication, corn was bred to produce around 2.5 times more calories per acre than wheat or barley. An interesting thing to mention about the Americas in general is that the continent lacked the large-seeded, easily domesticatable crops which naturally grew in abundance around much of the Old World. The Americas also lacked large domesticatable animals that could be used as draft animals. Llamas and alpacas were eventually domesticated, though they were not strong enough to pull heavy plows or carry heavy loads. These two factors would become very important in the story of the Western Hemisphere. But for now, we must set our sights to the south. South America was going through a very particular period 10,000 years ago, though to understand this, we must get a little backstory. Humans have likely lived in South America for over 16,000 years. The first people to move into the area seem to have been generalist hunter-gatherers that did not affect the megafauna populations all that much. The megafauna living in South America at the time included the massive South American short-faced bear, Arctotherium, saber-toothed cats, dire wolves, horses, glyptodonts, gompatheres, ground sloths, and toxodon. Their populations appear to have been quite small as their archaeological signal is extremely low. Then, around 12,900 years ago, new fish-tailed projectiles suddenly appeared and spread all around where megafaunal populations were the highest. The distributional overlap of this technology and range of megafauna strongly suggests that this culture was hunting these animals. The roughly 12,000-year-old paintings from Serrania de la Lindosa even depict humans interacting with some of these species, such as this example. The makers of these paintings may have belonged to groups of fishtail point-wielding megafauna hunters. But their days were limited. Fishtailed points and megafaunal populations abruptly disappeared around 10,900 years ago. After this time, human populations declined throughout the continent, particularly in areas once home to large populations of megafauna. Researchers suggest that this may represent a population overshoot, in which these human populations grew exponentially as they preyed upon large vulnerable megafauna until they exceeded the carrying capacity of the ecosystem. It didn't help that the climate and rising sea levels were vastly reducing suitable habitat for many of these animals. There is certainly more to be said about the megafaunal extinctions of South America, though by 10,000 years ago, most of these animals disappeared from the landscape. Due to their absence, human communities focused on different subsistence strategies such as hunting small animals and even more extensively gathering. Starting with the area of modern Colombia, we find possible evidence of agriculture over 10,000 years ago. There is evidence of the cultivation of arrowroot, squash, and bottle gourd. This may have been learned from the nearby Mesoamericans, though the opposite may have been true. The Andes, spreading along the length of the South American continent, have played a very significant role in the history of the land. The northern and central Andes are another hub of agricultural development. As far back as 10,000 years ago, the humble potato was domesticated from a wild species native to southern Peru. Most of the northern and central Andes were home to hunter-gatherers at this time. The Chinchorro culture of the Pacific coast were sedentary fishermen as far back as 9,100 years ago. Shell middens and bone chemistry reveal that around 90% of their diet was made up of seafood. A naturally mummified corpse dating to around 9,000 years ago was found in the Atacama Desert and is attributed to this culture. The dry conditions allow this to happen naturally, but many intentionally performed mummifications would be made by these people in subsequent millennia. Moving east to the Amazon basin, we find little evidence of human activity during this time. This is largely due to the difficulty of studying such densely forested regions, especially when looking for evidence of hunter-gatherers. We do know that early Amazonian populations favored some tree species more than others and directly altered their ecosystems. This may have been going on 10,000 years ago, though naturally this is hard to determine. One site not located in the Amazon to the east in Brazil is quite significant. The Pedra Ferrada site in Brazil has rock art dating to between 12,000 and 7,000 years old. Some of these paintings show very unique images. Wild animals and hunting scenes are common. This image displays people dancing around what appears to be a tree. There are some depictions of humans doing other activities, which I think I have to blur. Another very important find from Brazil is the Lagoa Santa remains, including Luzia woman. Dating around 11,500 years ago, her remains and other nearby less complete individuals are some of the oldest in the Americas. Two of these individuals carry the same mtDNA haplogroup as the Clovis Anzac I child found in Montana. Three of them have the same Y chromosome haplogroup found in the Spirit Cave individual we mentioned from Nevada. This further supports the idea that the people of the Americas were very closely related at this time and they are still relatively closely related to this day. Moving to the southern Andes and Patagonia, we find evidence of bands of nomadic hunter-gatherers 10,000 years ago. The most famous site from this region is Cueva de las Manos. The site was created in several waves starting around 9,300 years ago. This makes it some of the oldest cave art in South America. Over 2,000 hand stencils and multiple collages fill the walls, along with depictions of people, animals, and symbols. Most of the paintings were likely made by women due to the size of their hands. The feet of rhea, which are large flightless birds from South America, were even painted on the walls. As far as I know, this is the only evidence of a part of an animal being used in a hand stencil or cave art in general. Very interesting. This cave and surrounding caves also have hunting scenes and game drives using bolas and atlatls. Guanacos are the most common animals depicted in the cave, an animal which the Native Americans depended on in the region. Other animals include puma, fox, birds, and deer. The Patagonia region is an amazing place, and the hunter-gatherers that lived here must have lived some amazing lives. The world 10,000 years ago was an amazing place. Throughout the world, a rich array of cultures dominated their environments. Many were still subsisting through hunting and gathering, though others were domesticating plants and some already had domesticated crops. Though the world was far different, we can already see some trends that would lead to the rise of civilization on multiple continents. The state of the world and human populations 10,000 years ago really helps us understand how history would eventually unfold. If you enjoyed the video, please check out the other videos I made on what humans were doing a million years ago and 100,000 years ago. Make sure to like, comment something, and maybe even share to someone that may be interested in these topics. It would really help out the channel. This has been your host, North02, and I hope to see you again soon. Arrivederci.